Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Ganfaus, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We were joined in the first hour of the show by Karen Greenberg of the New York University School of Law. She has written an article for Tom Englehart's Tom Graham entitled Bush Policy Detained in Iran. I'll have more to say about that article here shortly. It's an excellent article. I'd like to engage in some detailed analysis and reaction to what Tom Englehart has said, as well as Karen Greenberg, in regard to Bush policy in Iran. I, at the same time, wanted to get into some conversation with all of you out there in regard to what I talked about on this show on Monday with Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars in his very fine article entitled Too Many Yarmulkes, The Ethnic Double Standard at the Heart of the Abortion Debate. Whether you caught that show on Monday or didn't, I think it's important that I revisit some of the things that Dr. E. Michael Jones talked about in that piece by going into some of the specifics that are actually in the text of that article, because that I think will underscore some very, very serious things in regard to who and what it is that has been behind the cultural war conflict in this country in the last 40 or 50 years, and who and what it is that is presently behind a neoconservative policy in the United States as it relates to our foreign policy dilemmas. Very definitely something that we need to take a look at. And as well, I'd like to say something in regard to what our caller from British Columbia, Canada, asked this morning. Daniel called in with a question for Karen Greenberg in regard to whether or not Karen believed that the 9/11 situation was an inside job and whether or not the war on terror ought to be in quotation marks. Let me say something to Daniel here. I believe that the 9/11 situation is certainly something other than what the American government has advertised. I want to go on record as saying that. Whether or not it was an inside job, I struggle with that question. You know, Wendy Campbell has been on this show. Mark Green's been on this show. Jim Fetzer's been on the show. Dr. Ron Larson, here in Austin, Texas, the very fine physicist from Cornell University, has added to all of this debate in regard to what really happened with 9/11 and the collapse of those towers. These folks have presented me with some information in regard to the collapse of those towers that dovetails with what Paul Craig Roberts has talked about, the former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan, and with what Morgan Reynolds has talked about. Dr. Reynolds, of course, has been connected with Texas A&M for years and used to be involved with the Bush administration. They've all demonstrated very compelling evidence that suggests that the collapse of those towers was the result of a controlled demolition. Now, folks, if that's true, what are the implications of that? Now, I'm not a scientist, but those who are and who have been on this show, including Dr. Ron Larson in Austin, Texas, have underscored, again, scientific evidence that points to a controlled demolition. This is what Stephen Jones, Dr. Stephen Jones, formerly of Brigham Young University, has also spoken of publicly. I find it very difficult to refute what they've said. And I must say that on the basis of what they have talked about, there is strong circumstantial evidence that suggests that 9/11 was an inside job. One other thing that comes to the fore in all of this, that is the Larry Silverstein angle, the guy who purchased the World Trade Center towers something like 6 months before the attack and who put together, purchased insurance on those buildings that resulted in a profit of $150 million after the events of 9/11. There's also the connection of Mr. Silverstein to Mr. Netanyahu and people connected with the Project for a New American Century. Was it an inside job? There is circumstantial evidence to suggest that it may have been. I'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live on RBN from San Antonio. We'll take a caller. Stay tuned.
Attention gardeners, if you've ever wanted to grow the absolute best tasting fruits and vegetables imaginable, well, here's exciting news. There's a new product called ProtoGrow, and it's dynamite in the garden. ProtoGrow is a bioactive superfood for plants. It works by providing true broad spectrum nutrition, allowing plants to achieve their full genetic expression. So what does this mean in the garden? It means mouth-watering fruits and vegetables, brilliantly colored flowers, herbs that finally grow to medicinal strength, blue ribbon garden produce jam-packed with bioavailable minerals and trace elements, giant pumpkins, even high-potency Hybrix wheatgrass. ProtoGrow is a proprietary blend of full-spectrum nutrients from the sea. It literally contains the basic building blocks of life itself. In fact, ProtoGrow is so effective at producing rapid plant growth in record time that it almost forces plants to grow even under the worst light and soil conditions. To grow tasty fruits and vegetables right now, go to growlikecrazy.com or call 877-327-0365.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
This is Mark Dankoff, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Karen Greenberg of the New York University School of Law was with me in the first hour of the show, talking about her essay for Tom Englehart's Tom Graham, entitled Bush Policy Detained in Iran. Through the show, I'm going to be looking back at this article, going into some of the specific things that it says, and pointing out areas of both agreement and disagreement with Ms. Greenberg, who I think is a very fine person. I think we would have some points of intersection as well as points of divergence, but it's a very worthwhile essay, well worth your time. At the same time, of course, that there are certain things that we would say in regard to this essay that would point out some fundamental differences with her as members of the populist American right. So that's something that, again, we're going to cover throughout the show this morning. I'm also going to be looking at Dr. E. Michael Jones and his essay that we discussed with him personally on Monday with Culture Wars. And that essay is entitled Too Many Yarmulkes, The Ethnic Double Standard at the Heart of the Abortion Debate. As I've said before, Dr. Jones' essay for Culture Wars is an absolutely essential one. not simply for who and what has been behind the culture wars in this country in the last half century, but the way in which some of those same players have been involved in the implementation of an American neoconservative foreign policy in the Middle East that quite clearly is backfiring, that quite clearly is producing a level of blowback against the people and government of the United States worldwide that threatens the peace and security of this country as well as of the entire world. So when we start looking at this whole situation in regard to culture wars, we start also looking at the whole issue of the denial of constitutional rights for American citizens domestically, at the same time that this whole issue of an interventionist imperialistic foreign policy abroad at the behest of certain interests also becomes part of the total package as well of what we criticize, rightly so, as members of the constitutional populist American right. So these are just a few of the things that we have going here for you. In the next hour or two, I'm going to take a caller here very shortly. I also wanted to mention that tomorrow, Mark Glenn of the American Free Press and Father John Martinez will be back with me in their normal Friday segment, hopefully, in regard to helping me analyze the issues of the day. We're going to be chatting with Mark Glenn further in that conversation about some of the things that he's still continuing to cover for the American Free Press. We'll hopefully get an update from Mark in regard to some of the latest things going on with the USS Liberty organization. And, of course, Father John Martinez will be bringing to us his usual political and theological analysis of the things that matter most to you and to me in the days ahead. That will be tomorrow, Friday. Greg Felton, the author of The Host and the Parasite, will be back with us on Monday. Greg's going to help me cover a series of issues for an hour or two on the show on Monday. And then Tuesday, we have a very special treat. Dilip Hero is going to be with us. Dilip Hero is one of the leading Middle Eastern scholars anywhere. That's something that's recognized by people across the political and social spectrum. He is, among other things, the author of Blood of the Earth. And going back a couple of years, Dilip Hero is the author of The Iranian Labyrinth. If you've not read The Iranian Labyrinth, you really need to, folks. I've read it once. I'm in the process of rereading it again before my Tuesday conversation with Dilip Hero, who will be coming to us live from England on that day. Dilip knows so much about Iranian history, Persian history, knows so much about the Middle East generally that he's an absolute encyclopedia. And that's why we're bringing him on again to discuss his most recent essay dealing with the Bush administration and its policies in Iran. But we're also going to be going back and trying to tap into some of Dilip Hero's encyclopedic knowledge of the region generally in order that we might be illumined, all of us, including me, illumined in regard to the way in which we need to interpret the things that are presently going on in Iran and in Iraq and in Palestine. So Dilip Hero will be teeing it up with us on Tuesday. He is the author of Blood of the Earth, The Battle for the World's Vanishing Oil Resources. But more importantly for Tuesday's conversation, he is the author of a book from a couple of years ago, The Iranian Labyrinth, which I hope to spend more time talking about with Dilip, as well as his perceptions as to what's going on over there in Tehran right now. One of the things that I'm presently putting an essay together on for the American Free Press is the whole issue of Kenneth R. Timmerman of the Washington Times, who seems to be particularly interested in Iranian expatriate politics worldwide, especially the conference in Paris, France last weekend that was known as the meeting of the Iran Solidarity Group. What is the Iran Solidarity Group? What is the significance of this meeting last weekend in Paris with these Iranian expatriates from across the political spectrum who want to see regime change in Tehran? And why is Kenneth R. Timmerman and why are a couple of other American neocons so interested in this movement? What does it mean? What are their connections? What is the larger meaning behind which we need to see the movement of American foreign policy and American military policy in a particular direction that is not necessarily in your interest or mine, much less the interest of the entire world? I'm presently, again, authoring something for the American Free Press on this subject. It will be out in the AFP print form probably in the next couple of weeks. I will also try to get the unedited version of that article posted at Al Bawaba at a future juncture. But keep an eye on this, folks. As I mentioned this morning, my conversation with Karen Greenberg, it's absolutely interesting and terrifying to see all of the parallels between the run-up to March of 2003 with Iraq and what seems to be the run-up to a much larger tragedy with Iran. Let's hope and pray that the latter does not happen, but the parallels are absolutely striking, and one of the things that becomes abundantly clear is that when you go back to October of 2002, Kenneth R. Timmerman wrote an op-ed piece for Insight on the News, which is owned by Reverend Moon's Washington Times, and in it, Kenneth R. Timmerman made explicit claims about Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction, and the fact that Saddam threatened the lives of millions, folks, millions of Americans, according to Kenneth R. Timmerman, in regard to the impending threat of a nuclear apocalypse at the hands of the former dictator of Iraq. This was the position being taken by Timmerman in October of 2002, and it seemed to be a primer for the Project for a New American Century crowd and for the neocons that were directly surrounding Rumsfeld in the run-up to what we did in March of 2003. Kenneth R. Timmerman, the same guy who was promoting a particular policy line on Saddam and weapons of mass destruction, which was being utilized by the Bush administration before we invaded Iraq in March of 2003, is now the same Kenneth R. Timmerman who seems to be exhibiting a particular amount of interest in Iran and in Iranian expatriate groups worldwide. Why is that? I'm going to be examining that question further in the days ahead, both for the American Free Press and at some point talking about it on a further basis on this show as well. We'll take another caller. Steve in Tennessee, you're on the line for Mark Dankoff. Go ahead, Steve.
Top of the morning to you, brother.
Hey, God bless you, Steve. What's going on?
Well, I've got an observation.
Sure.
And I'd like to toss it out so I can get some feedback from you.
Okay.
And I'm coming from, my first thing is a quote. I've given this before. It says, the best way to honor Pope John Paul II, truly one of the great men, is to take his teachings seriously, is to listen to his words and put his words and teachings into action here in America. This is a challenge we must accept. And this was given by Bush at the dedication of the Cultural Center. You can find this on www.catholic.net. And when I'm listening to this, I'm coming from Revelation 13, and I hear that, you know, when the towers came down, Bush got on the plane, and he flew over to the heads of the state, and then the last place he stopped before he came home was to see Papa in Rome. And when he got home, he got up on his little pulpit or stand there, what do you call it, and he says, we're going on a crusade. And a crusade, for anybody that knows, is a war against the Ishmaelites. So here we go on a war against the Ishmaelites. And I'm sorry I missed Karen, because I'd like to have had a question there in relationship. I'd like to have you correct me now, because I think it is the Military Act, a Military Commissions Act. Is that
yes.
6616? That's the one about the doing away with habeas corpus, right?
Correct. It's one of a series of things that seems to have cumulatively resulted in Bush's denial of habeas corpus. But you're right, Steve, yes.
Okay. Well, then I see here is that what happens is that they can say you're an enemy combatant or even suspected, and they come along with their paddy wagon, snatch you out of your house, middle of the night, haul you away. You're never seen again. You don't get to confront your accusers. You don't even get a day in court, and they keep you forever, and then they torture you. Okay, and I'm going, well, what did they do during the Inquisition?
Yes, well, I mean, it's all of what you raise here is, I mean, we could have a great conversation for hours about any of this stuff, but I just dealing with, you know, two or three of your points right off the top of my head, let's take the last first. This whole issue. Well, when we come back, we'll deal with this. Stay on the line, Steve. This is Mark Gancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Karen Greenberg was with us in the first hour of the show. When we come back, we'll be doing some news analysis and fielding Steve's question, or a series of questions which come to us from the state of Tennessee today. Stay tuned. You can call me at 1-800-313-9443. We'll be back.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously. Live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E. Documents, plural.com.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Mark Gancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our guest in the first hour of the show is Karen Greenberg of the New York University School of Law, talking about her essay for Tom Englehart's Tom Graham, entitled Bush Policy, Detained in Iran. You can find that essay online, of course, if you go to tomdispatch.com. You can also find it by going through Google search, I'm sure, and putting Karen Greenberg's name in conjunction with Tom Englehart and Iran or some version of that sort of Google search. In that regard, I'm confident the essay will pop up for you. And we'll try to look in a little bit more detail at that essay in the last hour of the show or so, as well as to get into some of the specifics from Monday's conversation with Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars. That essay is entitled Too Many Yarmulkes, the Ethnic Double Standard at the Heart of the Abortion Debate. among many things, Dr. E. Michael Jones, I think, illustrates for us that the issue of abortion and culture wars is not to be seen in isolation from the larger issue of American neoconservative policies as it relates to both domestic issues and foreign policy issues, and the whole way in which the alliance between Jewish interests and the interests of the Christian right and Jewish interests and African-American interests and so forth and so on is all a part of a very complex set of sociological and political and cultural debates that would take weeks and weeks and weeks and months to completely unpack and unfold. But back to our conversation with Steve in Tennessee. Steve, a couple of things come to my mind just in terms of beginning our chat this morning. In regard to this whole issue of Mr. Bush, I was going to deal with the last thing that you raised first and then work backward from that. We were talking, I guess, just starting to talk about the last thing that you mentioned, which is the whole issue of the suspension of habeas corpus on the part of the president. To me, it's quite clear that this is what has happened. I don't think anybody can look at the kinds of articles raised by Dr. Jacob Hornberger of the Future Freedom Foundation, who is a University of Texas educated lawyer. Dr. Hornberger has all kinds of things. You can find it at triplef.org. It's underscored that, in fact, the president has suspended habeas corpus. That's number one. And number two, what all is involved with the suspension of habeas corpus? I think you've put it all down correctly for us this morning, Steve. You've got a situation here where the president is claiming that he and or his Pentagon can declare anyone to be a so-called enemy combatant. And once you are defined by the president and the Pentagon as being an enemy combatant, you then are in a situation where you can be detained without formal charges being filed indefinitely. You can be detained without legal counsel. You can be detained under circumstances where, both in terms of the lack of formal charges, the lack of legal counsel, and residence in prison, all of those things can be yours or mine for months, even years on end, without anyone coming to the fore to say, hey, charge this guy or release him. It's this guy's right to have a lawyer. Let's get back to the Constitution of the United States in terms of saying that any American citizen, regardless of what they may or may not have done, is entitled to certain protections under the law. I think you're exactly correct, Steve. Mr. Bush has suspended habeas corpus and has done so ongoingly. And it seems that this Military Commissions Act of 2006, which you mentioned specifically, Steve, seems to be the icing on the cake in regard to what the president claims is his unilateral right to do this in conjunction with the American National Security Establishment. It's an absolutely terrifying development, and I think that people across the American political spectrum who have any degree of commitment to the Constitution at all need to be saying, hey, what gives with this guy and what gives with the direction that he's taking this country? We've seen a few ripples of protest in the Congress over some of this stuff, but by and large, it's become abundantly clear that thus far Mr. Bush has kind of continued in this vein.
Well, one of the things that, you know, that I'm looking at here is that when we look at Congress, and they just passed hate crimes bill. Has that passed?
It has passed the House, and I understand from talking with Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network, he was on the show, I think, last week, Ted indicates that it has passed in the House of Representatives. The bill, the counterpart in the U.S. Senate, that bill has been in the Senate Judiciary Committee, where representatives of Senator Kennedy and Senator Smith have both indicated that the whole thing is going to be shortly reported out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and is going to go to the floor of the entire United States Senate. That's the present circumstance. And okay. when it gets to the floor of the United States Senate, from what Ted Pike told me, there's a good likelihood that if it gets to the floor, it will pass. And if it does pass, then we're, of course, faced with a reconciliation of the House and Senate versions. And then the whole question of whether or not Mr. Bush will sign it. We'll pick it up with that point with Steve when we come back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing how to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power. Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold. With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing how to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power. Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Across America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Steve in Tennessee is on the line with us. And if anybody else around the country has a, or for that matter around the world, has a particular question this morning, you're also free to call in at 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. Steve, getting back to what we were talking about, this whole business of hate crimes legislation. Right now, as I mentioned before we went to the commercial break, in the House of Representatives, the bill has passed. Ted Pike has reported that to us, the National Prayer Network. In the Senate, The thing is currently hung up in the Senate Judiciary Committee, but Ted Pike indicates, of course, that Senator Kennedy and Senator Smith are working overtime to ensure that that bill makes it to the floor of the Senate, where it is likely to pass, in Ted Pike's judgment, if it makes it to the full floor. Now, if it passes, then there's got to be some reconciliation between the Senate version and the House version. And then ultimately some form of the thing will find its way to Mr. Bush's desk. Now, up to now, George Bush has indicated that he will veto this hate crimes legislation. But Ted Pike told us last week that it is believed that the reason the thing is currently hung up in the Judiciary Committee of the Senate of the United States Senate is to give the supporters of the hate crimes bill the time they need to lobby the president to change his mind in regard to actually signing this thing. So that would seem to be where we are at this particular juncture. And I think at some point, and let's hope that I'm wrong, at some point I think that there will be some version of this whole thing that does eventually make its way into American law. Let's trust that that analysis on my part is wrong, because all you have to do is look at what's presently happening in Canada alone to see that the implications of this in terms of constitutional rights and freedom of expression in the American Republic, you know, that whole thing will be over if this hate crimes thing actually becomes a reality. And, you know, as you look at this whole thing, George Bush has already done a series of things, Steve, that you've chronicled for us this morning. You know, you talk about the Patriot Act, you talk about the Military Commissions Act of 2006. We, you know, have mentioned from time to time in the show the NSA warrantless surveillance activities that have now been exposed even in corporate media. And in conjunction with all of that, we're talking about Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo. And then, you know, the guy who's been in the forefront of all of these situations is quite likely to be the fellow who can always reverse course and finally support some version of this hate bill downstream when it becomes more politically convenient to do so. So that's my take on that whole thing.
Well, one of the things is that this – well, let me move on in my observation here a little farther.
Sure.
That Cardinal Spellman, who is now Pope Pius, he was the cardinal of the Congregation for the – for Doctrine in the Faith, which is known as the Inquisition. It's even in the same building that it was in, so it never really went anywhere. It just kind of changed names like other of our institutions. But anyway, so he's Pope now. So who's the leader of the Inquisition now? Did I miss you?
Go ahead, Steve. I had a temporary computer glitch here. Go ahead and repeat yourself. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, anyway, that the Congregation for Doctrine in the Faith, known as the Inquisition, was headed up by Cardinal Spellman. Well, now he's Pope Pius, and he's moving up to bigger and better things. And so who's the head of the Inquisition now, and where is it? Yeah, his name is William Lavanna, and he happens to be in San Francisco.
Who is this guy?
He's an archbishop over there.
Okay.
And now the Inquisition has moved to the United States. And then I go back to the quote that Bush gave, that we need to put the teachings of Rome into our constitutional rights, so to speak, and the very fact that we're not going to be able to speak out against any religion, especially homosexuality, which happens to be a religion. It's not a lifestyle. It is a religion because they do worship Baphomet, and we follow those back to the Jesuits. They worship that deity, and also the Masons do so, and the New Age, and it's all... And, you know, you add this sort of stuff up, and you go, well, who's the head of the House of Representatives? And is she or is she not a staunch Roman Catholic?
Well, I would say a number of things. I think it's important to, in Orthodox Roman Catholics that I have talked to, in some cases on the air, would agree with me on this, that since Pope John the 23rd, there has been a remarkable official change in Roman Catholic policy in a whole host of issues. And I think it's important to see that in this regard, one can trace discernibly, since Pope John the 23rd, a significant amount of Catholic rapprochement with the Zionist movement. I think there has been clearly an infiltration of the Catholic hierarchy on the part of Freemasonry. But to me, Freemasonry at its highest levels needs to be understood in regard to what I think is provably the 18th century infiltration of Freemasonry on the part of the beginnings of what we know today as the modern Zionist movement and the Rothschild Banking Consortium. Perhaps we're looking at a situation where these political networks are intertwined with one another historically. But I think when it comes to isolating Roman Catholicism specifically, as far as these so-called, what the Orthodox Roman Catholics themselves call the anti-popes from Pope John the 23rd onward, there's a lot that's suggestive there in regard to the fact that these most traditional Roman Catholics tell me that they are in absolute agreement with evangelical Protestants like yourself that the...
Hold it. I'm not an evangelical.
No, I mean,
this is important to me because
sure.
Evangelicals come out of the World Council on Churches, and they're pantheists because
In that regard, I'm not an evangelical in that regard either. In other words, I think that in regard, I think your advisory there is well taken. In other words, institutional evangelicalism. Is corrupt through and through, and that's I think some of the things that have come out of the National Association of Evangelicals and the World Alliance of Evangelicals and so forth in recent years show the extent to which they have been infiltrated by globalism and Freemasonry and a whole host of other things. So your advisory is well taken there. But in regard to your interpretation of the Roman papacy as far as Romans 13 and eschatology are concerned, certainly, you, as you point out, your thinking is quite in line with that of Knox and Calvin and Luther and others going back to the Protestant Reformation of the 16th century. And it's in that regard that I guess we come full circle to Mr. Bush again. It seems to me that whether he invokes the approval of institutional international Jewry in regard to his clear connections to the Zionist movement, or Mr. Bush evokes the theology and the memory of Pope John Paul II, that he's constantly in search of a theocratic aura and a theocratic rationale for policies that clearly are advancing a global political and economic elite. We can agree upon that at a bare minimum. And it's an absolutely ominous thing to watch because whether Mr. Bush is appealing to the Zionist lobby or he's talking to the so-called institutional leaders of the Christian right, or he from time to time goes back to the Ronald Reagan playbook and trying to appeal to Roman Catholics through his alleged regard for Pope John Paul II, in all of these instances, it's very transparent that we have a most dangerous employment on Mr. Bush's part. And keeping in mind that Mr. Bush, in my view, is a front guy, he's not the architect of the policies that he's selling. I think he is the front guy for the policies that are being sold by a globalist elite that is interested in promoting a one-world government. And I think the Freemasonic movement at its highest levels is intimately tied up in all of this. That is, Mr. Bush is promoting this, whether it's what he's doing in foreign policy or whether we're talking about his suspension of habeas corpus domestically. In all of these circumstances, this kind of thing is best pursued with the acquiescence of those in the society that otherwise should be opposing your actions. And in order for Mr. Bush to achieve that, it seems to me that whether he's talking to John Hagee of Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, or he's talking to the current Prime Minister of Israel, or he's talking to some Roman Catholic Archbishop and invoking the memory of Pope John Paul II, that the strategy is the same, and that is to sell really bad and dangerous policies, policies that are counterproductive as far as the interest of the average American like you or I is concerned. To sell that, you go back to, again, the playbook that Ronald Reagan knew so well in the early 1980s, and that is to take these different so-called religious constituencies at the grassroots and to invoke certain symbols, certain images, certain historical personages to get those constituencies to say, hey, the president must be a man of God because, you know, he's invoking John Paul II in this, or he's invoking Billy Graham and Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and John Hagee in this, or he's invoking the memories of the Jewish Holocaust when he's talking about this and that. It's the same methodology, I think. When you look at the United States, loosely speaking, and I think Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars talked about this on Monday, if we simply break down the majority of Americans religiously and sociologically in terms of Roman Catholicism, Protestantism, and Judaism, using those terms most advisedly, but just in the most generic sense, breaking yes. most Americans down who have any sort of religious affiliation into one of those three groupings, it's striking to see the extent to which the institutional leaders of those movements that you and I both recognize are compromised to the hilt are nonetheless the people that most of the folks at the grassroots in these three divisions look toward for leadership and guidance. And since that's the case, and the president knows it, when he wants to sell an expansion of the war in the Middle East, or he wants to ask us to trust him in regard to his suspension of habeas corpus, although he's never admitted, obviously, publicly that that's what he's doing. We know that that's what he's doing. In order to make us comfortable with the rather ominous things that he's doing, Bush is quite good at appealing to this national prayer breakfast mentality, which simply invokes a few symbols, a few names, a few so-called religious leaders to increase the comfort level of the unsuspecting in regard to what's truly going on. And thankfully, you see through this, Steve. I certainly see through it. I would imagine that virtually 100% of the folks who read the American Free Press and listen to RBN see through it. But discouragingly enough, at least at present, we're not in the majority. And therefore, at least up to now, Mr. Bush has been able to do this sort of thing and pretty much to get away with it, because a majority of the folks that I talk to at the grassroots level who are in one of those three religious categories, loosely speaking, most of them tend not to see the president, at least in the draconian terms that you and I see him in.
Well, some of the things that I see in relationship to these end-time events here, you know, in Revelation 16, 13, it has the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet as a conspiratorial entity. They come together. And it's interesting, in the New Age movement, one of the most widely quoted people is Deschardin, who was a
Teilhard Deschardin, yes.
Yes, Deschardin, okay.
Yes.
I'm not too good on my... I guess it's French.
Don't worry, I wasn't a French major either. You're in good company. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's amazing how, you know, even one of the advisors of Castro, who's supposed to be totally anti-religion and Catholicism, one of his main advisors is a Jesuit. I forget his name. And, you know, I got pictures most of these guys, and like, go back to Clinton. He claims to be a Baptist, right? Well, I got a picture of him taking the Eucharist. You have to be a Catholic in good standing to take the Eucharist. So we've had more than one Catholic president. And
well, I guess this gets, you know, when we look at Bill Clinton, again, like George Bush, I think it's important, and you're really touching upon it quite well here, Steve, this morning. I think it's important to see the dangerous use of a certain brand, of civic religion that a series of American chief executives have used to legitimize their policies. And so from time to time, I think when we look at Bill Clinton and both Bushes, when we look at Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, when we look at, going back through a whole host of these guys, it's a circumstance where, the same guy that is taking the Roman Catholic Eucharist at one point becomes the guy who is talking to Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and John Hagee in the next breath, and he's the same guy who's maybe standing in front of the Western Wall and wearing a yarmulke in the next breath. So it's like, this whole thing is, hey, I simply need to utilize whatever religious symbolism I need to utilize to get the constituency that's represented by this symbolism to go along with the larger implications of my policies, which are inevitably designed to advance the multinational corporate agenda.
Yeah, but one of the things that we have to, when we look at this, is Rome will not allow anybody to take that Eucharist because that is their God. And the Eucharist is very important, and you can't take it unless you are a Catholic in good standing. You know, I've got a picture of the Pope kissing the Quran. I've got Arafat kissing the Pope's hand, and he was a Mason. And the Roman Catholic pontiff wears the ephod. And if you go to Mackey, who wrote the Freemason Encyclopedia, he says the high priest wears the ephod.
We'll be back with Steve. This is Mark Dankost, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
PersonalArms.com has all your self-defense needs. PersonalArms.com carries the highest quality law enforcement grade pepper spray and sells it at true wholesale prices that start at $6.95. Check out our new electronic barking dog alarm. This electronic watchdog sees through walls. Electronic barking dog alarm works when an intruder comes within 15 feet. The barking dog alarm will begin barking like a true-to-life angry German Shepherd. The closer the intruder comes, the more frequent and more threatening the barking becomes. You can purchase stun guns, stun batons, pepper spray, telephone voice changers, martial arts instructional DVDs, and the same tasers that you have seen the police use on TV and more at www.personalarms.com/RBN. That's www.personalarms.com/RBN or call 1-201-641-1442. Don't be afraid anymore. Receive a free pepper spray by mentioning RBN when you place your online order. We will not sell items prohibited by any state, county, or local law, so check your laws before making a purchase.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web, 24 hours a day, at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA, 1- 1-800-250-1591. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091.
America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Karen Greenberg of the New York University School of Law was with us in the first hour discussing her piece for Tom Englehart's Tom Graham. And the title of that essay, which is well worth your time, is Bush Policy Detained in Iran. Might say a little bit more about that essay later in the broadcast in regard to some of the specific things that it speaks of, both in terms of areas of agreement with Karen, as well as some possible areas of disagreement, if not in content, at least in as far as emphasis goes, as well as in regard to this whole business of implication. Certainly, Bush administration policy with Iran is bad policy. Bush's domestic policies related to habeas corpus are bad policy. But at the same time, I find that a lot of folks, good folks, including Karen Greenberg, do not necessarily understand the complete context behind what it is that Mr. Bush is doing, and I may try to address that in the last hour of the show. Got a fine caller again with us this morning, Steve in Tennessee. For those who also wish to call in, you can find me at 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And in regard to what Steve has said today about, among other things, Pope Paul VI and his wearing of the Freemasonic emblem known as the Ephod, Michael Collins Piper, I think, puts this into context in his book, The Judas Goats. If you turn to page 190, there's a picture of Pope Paul VI wearing this Ephod, and the caption is as follows. Better known under his title of Pope Paul VI, under which name he implemented the controversial Vatican II reforms, quote-unquote, that redirected and distorted traditional Roman Catholic doctrine at a time when Judas Goat Malachi Martin was acting as an agent inside the Vatican II conference on behalf of Zionist interests. On more than one occasion, Montini above, that's the name of Pope Paul VI, Montini publicly wore the Freemasonic emblem known as the Ephod, the symbol worn by Caiaphas, the Jewish high priest who ordered the death of Jesus Christ. Montini's ephod can be seen above, circled at the bottom of his portrait. At right is an ephod in which Hebrew letters can clearly be seen at the top. Said to be of Jewish extraction, Montini was buried Jewish style in a plain wooden box in a ceremony at the Vatican which featured not a single crucifix. Many traditionalist Catholics consider Montini a Judas goat. Zionist interests have also forcefully infiltrated Protestant fundamentalist churches, promoting the dispensationalist doctrine, first cooked up by John Darby in the 1840s and then widely promoted in the 20th century by Cyrus Schofield, whose famous Schofield Reference Bible was financed by the Zionist Rothschild family-funded Oxford University Press in London. Today, Rothschild-sponsored dispensationalism dictates the pro-Zionist stance of the so-called Christian right, a major influence in the Republican Party, which in turn is also connected with the Zionist Imperium under President George W. Bush. That's Michael Collins Piper's take on this in The Judas Goats on page 190. We'll be back with Steve in Tennessee and other callers. This is Mark Gankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.